What's going on? What's happening? What are you telling me?
I would like to extend to you an invitation to the pants party.
It's time for the Pop Culture Connoisseurs, a gal and a gay podcast with Kitty.
One time she punched me in the face. It was awesome.
And Nick.
He's the gay of my dreams.
And they have this book, this burn book, where they write mean things about all the girls in our grade.
What does it say about me?
You're not in it.
Those bitches.
Welcome to episode 168 of A Gal and a Gay. We are the Pop Culture Connoisseurs. I am Mick.
And I'm Kitty. Thank you for joining us.
So this is a fun episode. You guys are really going to enjoy this one. So we got to catch up with she was a local to us, or to me anyway, since Kitty's now in Texas, a Kansas City young
woman. At the time she was.
At the time she was, when we talked to her last year when she was debuting a short film at the KC Film Fest back in April of 2018. That, I'm looking back, hold on, episode 149. So go back to 149 after you listen to this one. Or actually, no, I'm sorry, 150. I lied, sorry. We did a couple of the KC Film Fest, and
we have a lot of episodes. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. So 150, we did an interview with her when she was doing the short on Dragtivist. And so you guys should go back and listen to that after you listen to this episode.
Absolutely.
Savannah Rogers is one of those people in the film industry that you need to pay attention to
her star is on the rise for sure. I mean, she's fantastic. And when you listen to this interview, you can tell she has such a passion and such a great vision for the story she wants to tell. So yeah, she's going places for sure, I think.
Yeah. And we knew that even back when we interviewed her the first time. The passion, she was, she picked up from a small town in Kansas, moved to New York, then went to LA. She has done a TED Talk, and she got to meet director Kevin Smith, and he connected with her because of her incredible story that she did the TED Talk on. And now, I mean, she's mentioned they're friends.
Yeah, it's a true, like, I'm sure she says surreal, but it's just such a cool thing to see happen to someone who is so passionate and everything. So it's just really great. So you get to listen to her, and we had some fun just talking about movies and TV shows we like and actresses we like. So you'll see what I mean.
And hashtag.
Oh, hashtag Scooby-Doo 3. We're in the process of doing that, getting that together. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Find out why by listening to this.
Right. Episode. Exactly. Here you go.
All right, we want to welcome back to our podcast. It's been a little bit more than a year, and we thought it was time to check in with our favorite filmmaker, Savannah Rogers, who used to be in the Kansas City area, but she's changed locations this time around.
Yeah, in the time since we did the last interview, I've moved to both New York and Los Angeles, so it's been a super weird year.
Yeah. Wow. That is quite a jump. And you've had quite a year, I would say. Last past 6 months, probably. I mean, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, it's crazy. I moved to New York in September 2018 for the TED residency, where I started working on this documentary called Chasing Amy. And I gave a TED talk about it in December 2018. And then in December, I left New York after I received word that I got accepted into the Outset Fellowship at Outfest here in Los Angeles. And then in like 3 weeks, I was out here, and the TED Talk came out April 30th. And everything's been pretty cool since. People have been super nice about the documentary and have wanted to help out and have been really responding positively to the TED Talk. And it's been a cool year.
So let's talk a little bit about Chasing Amy. So what is it about that film that really connected with you?
Well, I mean, I a queer kid growing up in Kansas, I didn't really have many resources in terms of LGBTQ content. But my mom owned the movie Chasing Amy on DVD, and I was going through this like Ben Affleck phase where all I wanted to do was watch his movies, which I recognize is so incredibly weird.
No, trust me, we all kind of had that phrase too.
Well, like, I'm a 9-year-old renting Changing Lanes from the video store. Like, I don't think that's typical. And So Ben Affleck's face is on the movie box. I pick it up. I'm like, Mom, can I please watch this movie? And it fundamentally totally changed my life. I mean, not just in, you know, wanting to become a filmmaker, it helped me come out. And I really think, you know, I was thinking about it today, I really think it's like grounded me in the way that I approach personal relationships, and that, you know, that idea at the end of the movie when they're showing the Chasing Amy comic, where it's like you put the, you know, person before, ahead of their actions, no matter what. And I really think that made me, like, that concept really made me aware of, like, what it meant to be, like, somebody's partner, you know, watching Ben Affleck screw it up on countless times watching the movie, learning, like, okay, how can I be a better partner to my partner? And now, you know, I'm engaged, you know, we're celebrating 5 years together next month. It's that movie has dramatically impacted my life in such a comprehensive way.
Well, congratulations on the 5 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Very
you.
Nice. Incredible. So you did your TED Talk about Chasing Amy and the impact on it. Did you, were you expecting the response that you got from it? Were you expecting any of that at all?
I was hoping for it. I don't know if I like fully expected it. Everybody was like, oh, when it hits, Kevin's going to reach out. Oh, when it hits, Ben Affleck's going to reach out, you know? And I'm like, okay. And then like, it went online, and then, you know, the term viral is weird, but I mean, it certainly went viral among everybody that I knew, to the point where their extended networks made sure it reached Kevin within an hour of it coming out.
Wow.
And he responded publicly on Twitter and was very generous and kind about it. And, you know, he's been really, really cool about it and very supportive. And, you know, I'm just super grateful that the people at TED took a chance on me. Because, you know, it was an interview process, and, you know, it's a testament to Cindy Stivers and Katrina Conanen at TED, who were like, we want you to give a talk about your story and your relationship to this movie. So, I mean, that was really cool to them.
Okay, so for our podcast listeners, they cannot see what is behind you. But if you could, for those who are watching this on YouTube, they'll be able to see. Explain what is behind you and who
is. What I'm holding right now? This is a copy of Chasing Amy on Laserdisc. And I had mentioned to Kevin that I was looking for a copy of the movie on Laserdisc to do scans of and to see if there were any different special features on it. And he was like, oh, just borrow mine. He technically said, have mine. And I was like, no, you're getting this back. he's very like overly generous. So this is his copy. And now I'm just going to try to find a place in LA that can do some full resolution scans of this very antiquated technology that I'm very excited to check out. But it's also cool to like see the art inside, to see like all the details that they put into it that you couldn't see on the Criterion DVD press of it. It was just super cool. I loved it.
Wow. What's Kevin Smith like? Sorry.
He's exactly what you think he's like. honestly, I mean, the dude that you hear on the podcast is pretty much the dude that, you know, has been really kind and generous to me. And, you know, he hasn't only been nice to me. I mean, if you look at his Twitter, like every other day, he's like doing something rad to help people. Like right now he's doing like a charity fundraiser that's going to be a reading of Clerks 3 to save the theater that gave him the space to cast and like do a script reading of Clerks. It's like an 80 seat theater. He just added another reading of it so that they could raise even more money for the theater. I mean, you know, this is just stuff that he does all the time. He's got a charity called the Wayne Foundation. I mean, I'm not the only person he's been this generous to. You know, I'm just the one that your listeners may care about.
So, I mean, we were talking about this before we started recording, but just how surreal has all this been for you? I can't imagine being so, you know, so endeavored to this movie and then getting to meet the creator and having all, I mean, I can't imagine what it's been like for you.
It's weird.
It's weird, yeah.
But it's really cool. Like, you know, sometimes it's like so overwhelming that I just like cry out of like gratitude, honestly. I mean, this is 12-year-old me is like constantly very excited about it, and then like 24-year-old me is just kind of like, all right, pump the brakes, let's like process this a little bit. You know, because with the movie, I mean, everybody's just been like so open and honest and kind, and I'm really excited for people to see it eventually when it's ready. But this has just been like the best experience, and this is my dream movie. I couldn't ask for anything more.
All right, so let's talk about the movie. What can we expect from Chasing Amy?
I think what you're going to see are two stories and how they intersect. So the first story being how Chasing Amy affected my life, you know, on this very micro level, the impact of this movie versus the broader impact it had on the LGBTQ community as a whole, back before it was even called LGBTQ, you know, when it was just the gay and lesbian community, when we weren't talking about all these other identities intersecting with it, you know, talking about the 90s and you know, what it meant when that movie came out in 1997 and how it may have hurt people and, you know, how different people received it at the time and where we were in the way that we talked about sexual politics. Because I think what's really interesting about Chasing Amy is that if you look at it through the lens of somebody who experiences fluid sexuality, right? This movie is a perfect depiction of bisexuality, pansexuality to a lot of bi and pan people. You know, the community is not a monolith in any way, so I can't speak for all, you know, bi or pan people or anything like that, but a lot of bisexual and pansexual people feel that this is a very strong representation of, you know, what it's like to be attracted to people in that way. And at the time, there was no representation of that, but, you know, they never say the words bisexual or pansexual in the movie. What they do say is that Alyssa is a lesbian. I don't think it's an entirely accurate word, you know, to describe the way that she feels, you know, especially, you know, talking about it in 2019, but in 1997, you know, what it did is it talked about how you're not bound by labels, you know, and how, sorry, my dog is running around. I'll put him on. He's way
My cat is too. Oh,
what's his name?
His name is Teddy. He's a little, scene stealer. Hopefully he'll be in the movie. We'll see.
Oh, great.
But yeah, so I mean, what it did talk about was the fluidity of sexuality in a beautiful way. If you listen to the character of Alyssa Jones, you can hear that in the script, but it doesn't undo maybe the damage that it caused given the context of when it came out. So we're examining the impact on my life versus the broader community and what that really means, what it means, what our media means to us, what it means to see yourself on screen, what it means to not see yourself on screen. And so we're trying to have this really nuanced conversation about, you know, sexual politics of the 90s versus today and, you know, what our favorite movies mean to us.
Have you heard from a lot of other kids or people in the LGBTQ community who've reached out and kind of said, like, this movie, I felt the same way, or it helped me as well? Like, has it resonated with other people?
Yes. Yeah. A lot of people have reached out. A lot of people have watched Chasing Amy in my world since the talk came out, and especially from millennials and Gen Z people who were like, you know, my friend Sal Rubio is a perfect example of this. He's a director that I've worked with out here in LA, and we did the Outset Fellowship together, and he was basically, you know, he's a Latinx man, and he identifies as gay, and he told me, you know, it's really weird to see this little white woman represent me better than I've ever, like, seen myself on screen. You know, and I think the message is kind of universal in that it's not who you love, but how. That's the tagline of the movie. And I think it, you know, I think people, you know, conveniently see what they want to see sometimes. You know, maybe I'm seeing a different movie than the one that actually exists. But, you know, I've seen other people take those same messages away from Chasing Amy, so I don't think I'm alone.
As a director, how do you approach a film like this? What's the outline look like? And does it change?
It's constantly changing depending on what new information I get. You know, basically I started off with the premise initially that was, do millennials feel differently about Chasing Amy than people from Gen X, right? Do those groups have different, completely different views on Chasing Amy depending upon their age? And what I found out very quickly is I couldn't even anecdotally prove that because not enough people my age had seen Chasing Amy. And so, you know, what I set out to do after that is just to try to have conversations with people about the movie. And so, you know, things change, you know, every day depending on what new footage we get, what new information we learn in our research. You know, it's an evolving thing. And we want to be honest and fair to, you know, all point of views represented here in this movie, or people who hate the movie. You know, we want to represent that point of view just as much as we want to talk about how much I loved it and what it meant to me. So it's been a really cool process to get to talk to all of these different people and get to hear their point of view on Chasing Amy. We have a lookbook, we've got a pitch deck, we, you know, have an outline that's always changing, you know, and in the spur of the moment, you know, my producers and I will come up with new concepts and things to try, because that's a great thing about documentary filmmaking, is that it's all comes together in the edit. You know, it's not like a script where it's like, you know, you shoot a certain amount of days and you're done. You know, there's always more that you can do to add to the process, and it's been really cool so far.
That's really great. So the plan is you're gonna put this in some film festivals. I know you were telling us about in Austin. You're probably gonna premiere it, I think, is what you said.
No. We're
sorry.
Just gonna show the sizzle reel. We're gonna show the sizzle reel after we do our next shoot in August at the Austin Revolution Film Festival. Keep my dog from scratching himself. Sorry. But we're gonna show it at the Austin Revolution Film Festival. Just a sizzle reel, a little preview for my friends down there. You know, that festival's been really good to me, and I wanted to share this with them. First, it's a good time.
So Savannah, let's go back to, so you were in New York and then you got to LA. So why the change?
I just moved depending on the opportunity. So I moved to New York in September 2018 for the TED residency specifically. And then I got word in December 2018 that I was accepted into the Outset Fellowship at the Outfest Film Festival. And so I moved out here to participate in that. That's been a 6-month fellowship, and we're about to wrap up right now because we finish our sound mix tomorrow, and then we premiere our short film that we collaborated on at Outfest on July 28th.
Wow. Where's Outfest?
It's in Los Angeles. It's super cool. It's like it's a huge LGBTQ film festival. A lot of really cool programming this year that I'm excited to see.
Wow. So you are very, very busy.
That's what they tell me.
Okay, so you talked about the sizzle reel. So is that something that you are editing, or is it somebody else?
If at all possible, I try to like step away from the footage and have somebody else edit. So we've had somebody else editing the sizzle reel, just because I always fear that when I'm in the edit. When I'm in the edit, as much as I am like present in the edit, that if I am the one editing, it becomes a kind of myopic vision that kind of loses sight as to what is connecting with people. You know, I'm also in the documentary, which is another layer to that. So I need somebody to be like, no, you have to include this shot, even if I don't want to be in it that much. But I was telling my producer today that, you know, if I am only on screen 30% of the time, I will be very happy.
But you have the story to tell,
right?
I do. Hopefully we can find some creative ways around that. We're very excited about what we're putting together, and I'm just excited to share it with people when it's ready.
Has most of the stuff you guys shot been just in LA, or have you guys traveled a little bit?
We shot 1 day in New York, 1 day in New Jersey, and we've shot 1 day in LA so far. So we've got a couple of days coming up in LA to do some interviews, which I'm really excited about. And then we'll go back to New York and New Jersey to shoot a couple more days. So, and then we're supposed to go to Detroit potentially to shoot some stuff. So we're just kind of going wherever the story takes us. But so far it's been really exciting. And the crew is kind of down to go wherever. It's very much that indie filmmaking spirit we're all chasing, right? So.
Right. So what do you hope happens with all this? I mean, do you really just hope that it gets to more people and more people really start to think about this kind of stuff or understand other people's points of views?
Yeah, I mean, I hope it creates conversation. Mm-hmm. I hope people, even if they don't like Chasing Amy and they don't like the points I'm making, that they can enjoy the movie. I'm hoping that people will maybe meditate on what the LGBTQ movement is. You know, this is the 50th year of since Stonewall. Mm-hmm. You know, the modern LGBTQ rights movement in the United States is very young. I'm hoping that maybe the movie can help us, you know, just, I don't expect it to have a global impact or anything like that, but if it makes a couple people, you know, really think about the way that we talk to each other and the way that we're representing each other and, you know, if we can be better to each other, that would make me happy. And I hope that people will hire me to make more movies after this. That would be really cool.
Yeah.
I got a lot of stories I want to tell. And it's super cool to be able to tell like my dream movie as my first feature or anything. So it's fun.
So do you have any prospects out there?
As to what?
As to what's next? What's your next project?
Always writing. Got this short film that I'm trying to make this year. It's a narrative comedy, and it's called Pancake Skank, and it's like a satirical, surrealist comedy about this woman that teams up with this guy named Loverboy, and they just start stealing pancakes county to county. But what it's really about is their like unlikely friendship. Like think like Streets of Fire meets Scott Pilgrim in terms of the visuals. It's super rad. It's super fun.
Sounds fun.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I remember seeing Scott Pilgrim in the theaters, and I was just in love with it.
It's an incredible visual spectacle. Like, I watched that movie, and I'm like, there's not one bad shot in the whole thing. And the sound design is incredible, and I'm just like, this is radical. This is a radical film.
Mm-hmm.
I just loved it.
Yeah, there's nothing been quite like it.
No, I mean, it feels like a graphic novel come to life. I mean, I think it really did justice by the, you know, the fact that it was, its source material is a comic. And I love that. I love the faithfulness to the idea of like what the comic was. I feel like in so many like superhero adaptations sometimes that people are like ashamed that they're adapting a comic book, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And it's a bummer. And it's, you know, it's like, man, lean into that. You have a whole fan base that are just is really excited
right.
about it.
Right, exactly, yeah.
And I think Edgar Wright did a magnificent job with it. I love that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So how do you find your inspiration? What inspires you?
Mediocrity is pretty funny to me. I like telling stories about people whose, like, definition of success is mediocrity. I don't know. I mean, I feel like whenever I'm coming up with ideas, a recurring theme a lot is like the idea of like suburban life, because I grew up in the suburbs. Mm-hmm. And like trying to escape, you know, it's very much that like New Jersey feeling of like wanting to get out, but then like what happens when you get out? You know, if you look at, you know, Bruce Springsteen, right? Like all of his music's about wanting to get out of New Jersey. And now he lives 6 minutes away from his hometown, I think.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like since leaving Kansas, I've like, you know, there's this reverence that has grown for my home state in a way that I didn't anticipate necessarily. You know, living in three different places in the span of a year, and it really gives you, like, three distinctly different places in the span of a year. It's really given me perspective on what I love about where I came from and what I don't love so much. And, yeah, so, I mean, the things that inspire me, though, I mean, it just... I just try to look inward and see like what's authentic to me. What do I think is interesting? What do I think is funny? What's the movie I want to see? And then expanding on that, you know, I've got a million crazy ideas, you know, I've got more ideas than I'll ever know what to do with. But, you know, the exciting thing is that, you know, sometimes people like those weird ideas and want to see them, which is exciting for me because, you know, like example, like the Chasing Amy movie, like this documentary, I thought nobody would care but me. And then I learned, wow, a whole lot of other people care that are not me. And that has been the really exciting thing about this last year is like learning that maybe my ideas have a place in this, you know, indie film world.
So you brought up, go ahead.
I was just going to ask if you have any advice for any young filmmakers. I'm pretty sure we've asked you this question before, but now that you have this other great level of success, you got all these great things, do you have any advice for people who want to get into filmmaking, or especially, you know, LGBTQ kids who want to tell their stories?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how successful I am. I mean, I'm just, you know, I just gave a TED talk and people took notice, which was nice, but I mean, I'm certainly not where I want to be. You know, it's always a perpetual climb, I think. But I mean, you know, just in terms of, I mean, like, don't wait for permission, I think, is the biggest thing. Is, you know, people always say that, but it's like really true. It's like, you know, I went through my first year of film school and I was like horribly depressed, and I'm still dealing with a lot of like the stuff, you know, that I talked about in the TED talk. And kind of just one day something like snapped within me where I was like, all right, you know what? I went to film school for a year. it wasn't making me a filmmaker the way I thought, you know, that would do that. And I just grabbed the, you know, I just, you know, I got a camera as a gift. I was like, please, if you give me this DSLR, mom, I had no income, I had no job, I had nothing. But like, if you invest in my future right now, I promise I won't let you down. And I got a DSLR and I went out and filmed a short film that month, and it was terrible and nobody will ever see it, but I did it. And, it continually gets better the more you practice, you know? So get out there and don't wait for permission and practice. And for LGBTQ kids that might feel like disenfranchised or like not empowered, it's like most of you have a smartphone, you know, like most of you have a story that you would like to tell. You know, Greta Gerwig has this great quote about how storytelling is your birthright. Everybody knows how to tell a story inherently. You are born with the ability to convey information to other people, or you develop that skill over time, right? So do it if you want to. Like, don't let anybody tell you that you can't, honestly. I mean, I don't listen to people when they tell me I can't do stuff, and it's worked out okay so far. Maybe it'll work out for you too.
Sometimes that's a motivating factor.
Right.
Totally. Yeah, that's a big motivating factor for me. Except what people sometimes don't realize is that like if you're a dick to me, I'm gonna not like you, you know? Right. Like, yes, you will motivate me, but I will not like you anymore. Like, yeah. That's the thing. You know, like, but I'm also used to that negative reinforcement, you know, having come from like the sports world where it's like, get your ass in gear, Rogers. And it's like, okay, yes, sir. Get back out there. But you know, if people are negatively motivating you and that's an incentive, like, prove those people wrong. Honestly, like, show people you can do the thing that they said you couldn't do. I mean, I feel like I'm usually in that position where someone's like, I don't think this is a thing that you should do. And I'm like, well, I'm going to do it anyway, you know, and here we are. Things are going okay for me so far.
Yeah.
So you're talking about all the stories that you like to tell and all the ideas that you have in your head. Is there a story back in Kansas that you think maybe coming home one day to tell would be something you want to do?
Oh, totally. I've got this, I've got one that I'm working on. It's about a televangelist, and I think it would be a super fun film to make. I'm still workshopping it right now, but I mean, I think a lot of stories have that kind of like Kansas sensibility and, you know, my background, you know, I have a great love for the place I didn't anticipate having. Like when I lived there, all I wanted to do was get out. And, you know, like, I think getting out was good for me to like, you know, experience other things. But you know, my family's still there. You know, there's a lot that I miss. I miss being able to go 70 miles per hour on the highway and just listen to music and there'd be nobody around. Mm-hmm. I miss that. You know, that was a very like relaxing thing. And now it takes an hour to get 6 miles anytime you want to go out. So
that would be hard to get used to.
Yeah.
Well, I have road rage. I don't know if I should say. It's not a great thing. Oftentimes, you know, like people will call me when I'm in the car and I've got the hands-free thing on my, you know, on the thing, you know, it comes with the car. So I'll like answer it and then they'll just hear me yell at other cars because they did not use their blinker or they did something that was completely ridiculous. And it's like, why am I being punished for your mistake? So that's how I feel about LA traffic, but I'm trying to find like some calm. Podcasts are helping, I think.
Yeah.
Have you run into anyone out there that has ties to the Midwest or Kansas or Kansas City?
All the time. Like I was doing a gig one day and I was walking down the street in WeHo, and I swear to God, like across the street, somebody yells Savannah, and it's Danny Bowersox, who's a sound mixer in Kansas City, a super great guy. But like, he doesn't live there. He lives in Kansas City or Lawrence still, I'm pretty sure. And you know, he's a guy that I worked with for years on indie projects in Kansas. And so it was just super funny. I mean, like a guy that still lived in Kansas, like saw me across the street. You know, my, it was pretty fun. But I meet people all the time out here who are from the Midwest or something like that. And it's a good like bonding point. But I've also met a lot of people who are like from Los Angeles, which is something I didn't think really existed.
Right.
just thought everybody was like a transplant. And it's pretty funny. Like my friend asked me one time, like, what's the Midwest like? And I just like, I did a double take. I was like, what did you just ask me? You know, usually some people are from somewhere else. And so that was a fun moment. So, I mean, again, increasing the diversity of the experiences that I've had, you know, that's the great thing about going so many different places in the last year.
You think you're going to be in LA for a while?
I have no idea. Honestly, yeah. It's like stressful not knowing. you know, I could be out here a while. I could be back in New York. I could come back to Kansas City for a bit to reconnect with my family. It just kind of depends on work and, you know, where things are taking me. My first priority is the documentary, obviously. So, and living in Los Angeles while making this documentary has a lot of advantages, but I'm open for anywhere, you know, but I'm having a pretty good time out here. It was a hard adjustment at first going from New York to LA, but you know, the community really makes it all amazing, you know, making all these friends from the program and, you know, just, you know, other people who podcast and, you know, people who just like movies. Like, that's been the best part of it, is finding a new community.
Okay. So talking about movies, have you seen any movies you'd recommend lately, or watching anything on streaming?
I am super into the show Dead to Me. I think that's an incredible show.
It's so good. Yeah.
So good.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Oh my God. I mean, look, two veterans of the industry.
Right.
And Linda Carter. I mean, just so good. They're so good.
Yeah.
I watched that show and I'm like, the show's super gay, but they're not letting it be gay, which I'm just...
season two, we'll see.
I think it could get gayer. Liz Feldman is a lesbian, the creator of the show, and I'm like, she knows what she's doing. So I love that show, and I saw the Farewell last night at the ArcLight, and it was the first time I'd been to the ArcLight, and that was a really cool screening experience. Like, the people who go to the ArcLight are, like, really serious. Like, they were shushing other people. I was like, I've never been in a movie theater where so many people, like, shushed each other. And that was, so that was interesting. But the Farewell was an incredible film. I mean, and what's amazing about that film is that the director is such a, Lulu Wang, I think it's pronounced Wong. She has such a vision for the piece. It's so specific it's incredible experience. When it goes nationwide on, I believe, August 2nd, I hope everybody goes to see it. And it stars Awkwafina, who is amazing in this like dramatic role, but like there are so many moments of levity. Like, there's a lot of laughter in our screening, and it was, you know, it was pretty incredible. I loved it.
Great. Good to know.
But Dead to Me. Like, I want to just have a whole show on Dead to Me.
I binged that like hardcore. Like, I couldn't stop watching it. Stayed up very late watching it. So very good.
I mean, like, and James Marsden too. I mean,
right.
I did not expect him to be on the show. I did no research. Basically, all of my queer friends were like, watch Dead to Me right now. And so Riley and I, you know, my fiance, you know, she was here visiting me. And we watched it. We watched it and we were like, what the fuck is happening on this show?
This right. is
bonkers. And we just enjoyed it so much. And so I watched it, I think, one more time all the way through. And then, like, sometimes I'll just watch the pilot because the first half is like a funny lesbian rom-com. And then
I have theories. I think the husband, I think there's some kind of twist that's coming up in season two, because they never cast him, and there's something I think they're saving for season two.
Yeah, I have no idea. I was really expecting a twist that Judy was not the one that killed him.
Right.
I'm gonna put a spoiler alert at the beginning of the video.
Like, right. I know. Yeah.
No, but straight up, like, I swear to God, I was like, Judy couldn't have killed him. No, there's no way. She hit
right.
a beer. No, come on. She did not kill a guy.
She killed someone else.
Right. They committed hard to it, and I was surprised that they committed to it, because I was really expecting, like, an additional twist.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just shocked. But, I mean, like, and Christina Applegate's incredible. I mean, the way that she does all those levels of anger and it's just like simmering under the surface is amazing. I love Linda Cardellini. She is like everything she's ever done has been great.
Yeah, I agree. Even on ER, I loved her on ER. So That's when I first introduced her.
I never watched ER, but I like her so much that I'm kind of willing to go through. What, that show was on for like 20 years, right?
Yeah,
so
something like that. It was on for very
long. Watching 14 years of ER before she ever fucking shows up. Like, I'm thinking about doing it. You know what I mean?
Well, I can tell you, I was in high school when it was on, and I loved her then. So, yeah. So.
Oh, man. And Freaks and Geeks, like, so
Yeah, Freaks and Geeks, exactly.
And Scooby-Doo. I mean, Scooby-Doo. Come on. She was Velma.
If you've looked at my Twitter feed, you know exactly how much I love Scooby-Doo. it's time for Scooby-Doo 3. And it
was, well, you know,
I have a pitch for it.
After a few more years in LA, you can do Scooby-Doo 3.
Listen,
you know,
start that. Look, if somebody will connect me, I've got a good idea. Like, James Gunn's too busy to write the rest of them. Like, hit me up. Clearly available. No, but... God, I mean, those movies were so funny. I don't think they were appreciated when they came out. They were kind of seen as like these like kitschy things. And like, there is a reverence for the Scooby-Doo movies, but also they were perfectly cast. Like if you look at the cast of Scooby-Doo, like that's a perfect live action adaptation of that cartoon. And I remember sitting in the movie theater at like age 8 or something like that and being like, how did they get it right? How did they take the cartoons and make them people? Like, I didn't understand, but it felt inherently, like, amazing, like, what they were doing. So I think it's time for Scooby-Doo 3 and not any of this reboot shit, but it was really funny. One of my Twitter followers, like, I was making jokes calling, like, Warner Brothers cowards, and then they tagged a PR guy from Warner Brothers. And then, like, that Warner Brothers guy, like, fucking scolded me, like, wow, really great way to get your pitch scene is to, like, insult the studio. Which, like, if anybody knows internet humor, like, calling somebody a coward is basically a compliment, in my opinion.
Right. It's a joke.
That guy did not get it, and he was very upset. And I was just like, Jesus Christ, now I'm never going to make Scooby-Doo 3. My life is over. Fuck it. I'll just go back to making this documentary. It's fine.
Scooby-Doo 3. All right.
It's time. I have a pitch. I'm gonna write it as a spec just so that when people are reading specs, they'll be like, what the fuck is this? And then they'll finish it and they'll be like, you're hired. I think that's what's gonna happen. We'll
see. I've always wanted to produce a Thundercats movie. You're not old enough, Savannah.
I know about the Thundercats. Okay, so good. Cool.
That was my favorite cartoon growing up. And I grew up in the age of He-Man, G.I. Joe, and Thundercats. All my favorites. And Jim of the Holograms, but Hollywood already fucked that one up. So, but Thundercats, I want a live action Thundercats more than anything. And I'm going to work on a treatment. And I'll send it to you, and you can read it, and you can tell me what you think.
Okay, I'll do it. You send me your podcast, I have to do it.
Right, yeah. And you can send me Scooby-Doo 3, and I'll take a look at that.
Yes. All right. See, this is networking for the folks at home. This is how you make it happen.
Right.
This is Hollywood. Fine.
Okay, so real quick, we talked about films, Scooby-Doo, all that stuff. What about documentaries? We were talking on another podcast that will be released the same week about Knocking Down the House, the AOC
Knocking Down the House, amazing. Oh. That was so good.
So good.
I mean, you kind of knew the ending, but it was like, it was really good. I mean, you know, she's such an interesting person, and you know, fuck the president for all the shit he said today about of that shit about go back to your country,
right?
Horrible, racist, ridiculous shit. And I think Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is just an incredible, incredible leader. The way that she's been able to, you know, capture the attention of so many people, and so watching that documentary was really cool. And you're also rooting for everybody else who's coming up with her along the way. You know, and you know, I don't want to give away like the whole ending of the movie, but you know, seeing her the first time she's in Washington as a newly elect, or as a congresswoman elect, it's a wonderful shot when she's riding the scooters with her boyfriend. I just thought that was lovely. So, yeah, that was a great movie. I also watched I Love You Now Die on.
I wanted to watch that. Yeah, is it good? I mean, it looked great, but that whole story's crazy. So
it's a wild ride. I mean, Aaron Lee Carr directed it, and she did the HBO Heart of Gold documentary that also recently came out, Mommy, Dead and Dearest, Dirty Money on Netflix. I mean, she's quite good, and this movie is quite good, and it adds a lot of understanding to, you know, it's what typically happens, right? Where there is a media circus around some kind of murder case or, mm-hmm. you know, in this case, manslaughter. And I think this case does have a lot of repercussions for moving forward in the age of, technology. I mean, technology's always been around, right? I mean, just depending on the era, but like, you know, specifically text messaging and digital communications like that. And I thought it was a really cool look that was open-ended and left the viewer, enough information to decide on their own whether or not what we were fed through the stories was real or manufactured or whatever. It was really cool.
Okay. Great recommendations. I love hearing what other people are watching and going to see at the theaters.
Yeah, me too. Because it can be sometimes hard to make a choice. And so it's nice when you hear recommendations from other people. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everybody just stay home and watch Dead to Me and, you know, everything else can go to hell. Cool. Look, the Emmy nominations come out tomorrow.
I know
it's not going to go my way.
I mean.
And I am upset.
Right. I mean, they have to get nominated, both of them. That show has to get nominated. But
are you guys part of like the Critics' Choice anything? I mean, vote for Linda Cardellini and Dead to Me.
I am not, unfortunately, but if I could, I would.
But I have friends who are. So
all right, get everybody in the Kansas City Film Critics Circle, whatever you want to call it, get all those people voting for Linda Cardellini for Dead to Me. This is the campaign. It starts now.
And
she'll have no option but to thank me for her.
You're right, absolutely.
We're running.
And then she can be in your Scooby-Doo 3 movie.
Yes, I mean, that's all I want. I mean, right. Scooby-Doo 3 for her to win the Critics' Choice Award, all the things. I mean, the troubling thing, though, about like TV right now is like, there's so much good stuff. It's like impossible to break out. I mean, like, in all honesty, if Phoebe Waller-Bridge won for Fleabag, I would be so happy.
I would be happy with that too, because she's amazing. God. Yeah,
she's
I agree.
So good. And that second season is just
It's.
I haven't watched the second season yet. I just finished the first, and she is fantastic. And Killing Eve too.
So good. Jodie Comer on that show is ridiculous. I was really surprised after watching the show, the first season. I haven't seen the second season yet, but after the first season, that she wasn't getting more attention in the American award season stuff. Because she's clearly a breakout star. I mean, Sandra Oh's incredible too, but like the lack of recognition for her, I was like genuinely surprised about. And then she won the BAFTA, and I was like, oh, it's all good now. It's all good.
You're right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, she came out of nowhere. That's perfect casting right there.
Yeah, she was on she was on this Netflix show. Just something about a doctor. I haven't seen it yet, clearly. But she is remarkably talented. Villanelle is just it's another one of those characters with layers. I mean, just Linda Cardellini, Jodie Comer, and then Viola Davis for How to Get Away with Murder. I haven't seen the season yet, but I'm sure it was fantastic. That's my vote. MP Wall. Perfect Emmy ballot. Don't ignore the fact that they're all the wrong categories.
It's cool. Right.
Well, maybe we'll have to have you back on when we talk all Emmys.
Please, I love award season. I feel like I'm the only person in the world sometimes that isn't like, award season is a joke. It's all, you know, it's all this, it's all that. And I'm like, I just think it's fun to watch. It's a spectacle. You know, it's fun when like the underdog wins. You know, it's fun when you see something really innovative get recognized. And that opens new doors for people so that they can be in cool things. Like, I think it's fun.
Right, or when the wrong movie wins because of the person who announced it. That's always
or the wrong movie wins because people are chickens and they can't vote for Brokeback Mountain to win Best Picture. I said
right. It's okay. I think there's
another Linda Cardellini movie.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
Jesus Look at Christ.
That. Sounds full circle. Linda Cardellini all the time.
What I love about Brokeback Mountain's like campaign from that year is that like people were like straight baited into watching it. Like all of the promotional material shows like Jake Gyllenhaal with Anne Hathaway and Heath Ledger with Michelle Williams. Like I think
that's
a lot of people didn't know they were walking into a game.
And that's so that really really funny. But you're right, absolutely.
I would love to be tricked into seeing some gay movies. You know, yes. I know the word tricked is like definitely like a word that you gotta be like careful with. But I love the idea that people were like, oh, Heath Ledger, 10 Things I Hate About You. And then they were like, oh, I mean, a lot of people were like homophobic as fuck about that movie, but I mean, it's a magnificent film.
It's a beautiful movie. It really is. And beautifully acted. Yes.
Oh, I love that movie. Yeah. Probably Linda Cardellini, doing all that, you know.
I can't wait to hear a story when you run into her on the streets of LA. You need to be thinking about this, Savannah. What would you do?
It would be embarrassing, I'm sure. Okay, so this is funny. So my mom came to LA to come visit my mom and my dad, and so we went to a Barnes and Noble. You know, my fiance, my mom, and my dad, and we all went to the Barnes and Noble, and like my mom was complaining. She's like, "We haven't seen any celebrities yet." And I'm like, "Look, I've lived here for a couple of months and I haven't seen any celebrities yet. You know, like it's not as common as you think sometimes." And then I swear to God, like 15 minutes later, Amy Adams is at checkout with us. And,
wow. That's a pretty big star sighting.
And she was like doing double takes. And I did a double take and I was just like, "Mom, don't." And then Amy Adams noticed what we were doing and she put on her sunglasses after that indoors. And I was just like,
This is horrifying.
I was like, "Mom, do not say,
don't embarrass me in front of celebrities."
Right. I'm sure like Amy Adams gets like stopped in public all, but she was there with like her kid and her husband. Right. And, you know, we didn't want to bother her, but my mom was like, and we're Amy Adams fans in this family, you know? So it's, she seemed perfectly nice though. She just, probably was like, "Well, fucking weirdos, Barnes and Noble." So anyway, if I ever saw Diane Lane or Linda Cardellini in public, it would be horribly embarrassing. Just because I love them so much, like it would be embarrassing. I would just be like, I don't even know. I would run away. I would probably like triple take and then like go in the opposite direction. Just don't want to inconvenience them, but then I've made them feel weird with my triple take.
Right.
But I feel like Linda Cardellini would be super nice about it and be like, "Hi." Like, I feel like she'd just be like, "What's up?" Like, she seems like a nice lady.
She does seem like a nice lady. I agree. Yes.
Yeah.
I feel like you need to just kind of mention this to Kevin Smith.
If he knows her. I don't know.
I bet he knows someone I think he knows someone that knows her. I'm pretty sure.
I mean, like, I know people who, like, know her, but I'm not going to, like, bother them to, like, meet her. Like, I want to meet her in, like, a professional capacity and then unload that I love her entire body of work and it's fine.
So I think you probably need to be working on that Scooby-Doo 3 script so you have it on you
at all times.
On the end of her.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's fine. I carry my backpack around with me. I feel like a giant baby, like walking around LA with my backpack, but it's like, it's good for like weight distribution. Anyway, but I'll just like carry that in my backpack and be like, "Here you go, Linda Cardellini. Make this happen."
It's been waiting for you.
Or I'll write my like dead to me spec where Judy and Jen finally reveal their feelings for one another. But by the way, the show is so gay. Like, there's a whole moment where they put their heads together and talking about co-parenting Judy's potential baby.
What? I know. I know, right? Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Judy literally says in the pilot to Jen, "What are you wearing?"
Oh, right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, you're right.
And then she says, "I think gay is beautiful." Sam, right, Judy? Because you're gay. You're fucking gay, Judy. Some shit. Hopefully Linda Cardellini sees Chasing Amy when it comes out and is like, "Wow, have to work with them." And then, you know, it'll just happen organically. and they never see this podcast. Hopefully Linda Cardellini never sees this.
Yeah, let's hope so.
Or when she's Googling you, she's like, oh, this is... Oh,
oh.
She's been stalking me for years. Oh, okay, I see how it goes.
I mean, but to be fair, I mean, she's like, I mean, she's somebody who's been working for so long that, like, it's kind of hard not to, like, find stuff with her in it. And she's just been in, like, this incredible, like, body of work, honestly, straight up. Like, Freaks and Geeks. She's super funny in that movie Grandma's Boy. I always saw that as a kid, like, on Comedy Central. God. That's a specific movie. Yeah. But it's, I mean, there are tons of, like, Christina Applegate's another one of those people, that there's a show she did, I think it was called Up All Night with Will Arnett and Maya
Rudolph. Oh, yeah.
On NBC. Yep. Like, Christina Applegate has probably been in, like, everything similarly to the, like, Linda Cardellini has been, like, Anchorman movies, Married mm-hmm. with Children. I mean, just, like, so many good things. Friends, I mean,
right.
It's two legends of the industry.
Legend, yeah. Yeah, legend.
Oh, yeah. So it's just good. It's a good time.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to hear your story eventually when you run into Linda Cardellini.
Yeah. I mean,
the story of Linda Cardellini and us becoming friends. Yeah, it's mm-hmm. It's gonna be great.
Well, Savannah, thank you for being here with us.
Thank you.
And we can't wait to see Chasing Amy, and we're just really happy for you for all your success. It's just really cool to see your progress and everything. So it's very cool. We're very happy for you.
And how would you like people to follow you if they have any questions?
We're at Chasing Amy Doc on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the movie. And then I'm on Twitter at Snack Pack, SnacPack, or just my name, Savannah Rogers, on Instagram. Super active on Twitter. When the TED Talk came out, people were super nice and they were like, I'm gonna follow you on Twitter. I'm like, great, I guess I gotta use this again. And it's been fun. I mostly tweet about Scooby-Doo 3 and it's a riot. Yes, and when this episode comes out, please do not tweet it at Linda Cardellini. I think she's a scary.
I promise I will not do that.
I can't trust Kat over here. I don't
know. Oh, no, I won't. I won't, no.
Right.
I mean.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me.
Thanks, Savannah.
All right, there you go. So we all love Linda Cardellini. And we all want Scooby 3, Do 3 to happen.
But so, only if Savannah Rogers.
But only if Savannah is in it and Linda Cardellini. So that's the only stipulation. So look for that in the next, 10 to 15 years. I don't know.
And also Thundercats the movie.
That's right. Again, Savannah is just so great and it's a joy to talk to her. So I know we'll be talking to her many, many, many times to come as her career furthers, because she's doing great. So, mm-hmm.
So thank you again, Savannah. We really appreciate it. Yes. Okay, so you can find us on a new platform. Just recently, we have arrived on Spotify.
Right. We finally figured it out.
Right. Yes, it took a while, but we figured it out.
But we're on Spotify, but we're also on, every platform you can find podcasts, Apple, Google,
Podbean. Love Podbean.
Podbean is the hosting site that hosts our podcast. They've been really great to us, and they're really great supporters of podcasts, and they have a bunch of podcasts that you should listen to. So anything you want to listen to, but you can listen to us there. And you can follow us on social media, A Gal and A Gay, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and our website, agalandagaypodcast.com. So there you go.
Yes, you can find us all kinds of ways, because we want you to join the conversation. Comment, tweet at us, whatever, and let us know if you want to be on our podcast as well, because we can have you on, especially if you're as passionate about pop culture and TV and film and all that good stuff as we are. We love to bring in other voices.
Absolutely.
So then we don't have to talk as much.
Right, exactly.
So, guys, thank you for listening. We really appreciate it.
Goodbye.